And it gives you like an ethereal kind of pace and feel. And there's a, you know, as you're watching it, you could tell that it was like, and Frank was like, oh, that was a cool car. Is that an old car? Is it a period piece? And I'm like, no, it's Gotham. So because it's Gotham, it has this off-kilter, not old, not new, but different feel to it. And they really carry that out.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
All right, Ted, it's episode 90, 10 more for the century mark.
That's right. Is 90 significant, right? That's a lot. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, I mean, but do you stop there or do you get to 100, right?
Oh, you got to push through to 100.
That's it. That's right. For sure. All right. Yeah. So let's get into beers.
Okay.
Because I want to sip on this one I have.
Me too.
I don't want to be like pounding it. It seems like it might be a little bit heavier. But before we get to that, what are you drinking?
So I just got back from Frank's. So I was over with the kids. We were over at Frank and Barbara's for a beer. He had a thorn beer. It's called Hopster Pot.
Hopster Pot.
Like a hopster pot, like a lobster pot, but a hopster pot.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah.
And it's quite a hoppy beer. I had that with him. I shared that with him. And then I shared some of that hop stash that I had a couple weeks ago on the show.
Yeah.
But tonight for the show, I bought a Voodoo Brewery Untitled Art Imperial Stout.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I wanted a little something different.
Yeah.
And I wanted to try to beat you tonight on ABV. So I went with this.
Oh, well, I think you got me for sure.
I went 12%. Did I beat you?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I'm going to crack it. And Imperial Stout is a vigorous pour, right?
Yeah. So a vigorous pour is when you're on nitro. Otherwise, just pour it standard.
Well, it is.
So the nitro is what the reason for that is it doesn't really foam much, you know?
You want to activate it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's see how alcohol-y this is at 12%.
Yeah. Let that head go down there a little bit.
All right. And what do you have tonight?
So I was a little bit sleepy, so I have a coffee stout.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I went with a stout too, but I'm 6.2%. So not quite the 12.
Not the imperial.
Yeah, and I'm only doing a 12-ouncer as well. This is Sierra Nevada coffee stout.
Awesome.
Yeah, let's see how this one is. All right, we'll let that head go down a little bit. Oh, it smells very good. So while that's going down, how was your week, Ted?
My week was good. This is really nice. This Imperial Stout is smooth.
You got it at Handy Market?
I got it at Handy Market. It's cool because it has this Voodoo Brewery has like a piece of art on the label.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And it says artist is Teresa Navajo. So she's actually like an artist. And the kids were with me trying to select this beer tonight at Handy Market, and they were like, oh, get this one. And there were three of us getting beers, and it was kind of, there were two other guys getting beers there too. And we were all chatting it up. So it was fun.
Man, this is very bitter.
Is it?
It's like, yeah, it's I don't know. It's like almost like a really bitter dark chocolate almost.
Huh.
I mean, it's very good. I love it, but it's more bit. I was thinking it was going to be creamier and smoother, but it's got a little bit of a bitter bite to it.
Wow.
Yeah. A little caramely on the back end, and definitely, yeah, dark chocolate and caramel bitter, but like that coffee on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very nice. Smooth. Very smooth. So what are your tasting notes?
Yeah, so mine is also very smooth. Mine is great for a 12%er. Doesn't have the alcohol aftertaste, so.
Not too boozy?
Not too boozy.
Yeah, nice.
The, you know, the stout helps even everything out, and I think it's probably tastes similar to what you're tasting. You know, it has the cacao nibs kind of taste and some...
Right, yeah, exactly.
Some coffee-ish kind of tones and stuff, but a nice, solid overall beer.
Nice, very good. So how's your week?
My week was good. Very, very busy at work. So that took up a lot of time.
Yeah.
Bitcast is amazing. It's starting to get some traction. We're getting some users. We still don't have the app fully, you know, the mobile app fully out in public, but we're starting to get some developing in it. It feels like we're very close to releasing the app. So that's really awesome. And then, yeah, it's just super packed full of stuff. We had our monthly Orchids meeting this week. So that was this past Wednesday, and we're gearing up to our holiday party in December. So as the president of the Orchid Society, I'm trying to figure out how to make things better for everybody.
So, I mean, like you're teaching people how to water them and stuff?
Or? Well, as I said in my president's note in last month's newsletter or this month's newsletter, I'm not a grower. I'm in awe of all the people that grow orchids. But I do like the community that the Orchid Society has, you know, just the people that love this flower and very specific. And
how many people are in this?
There's like 30 to 40 people.
Wow. That many?
Yeah. And they, you know, some come all the time, some come every now and then, you know, it's like, it's a monthly thing. So we're trying to just grow it all the time.
All from the Valley, or are they from all over?
Yes. San Fernando Valley. Yes.
Wow. I never knew there was such a demand for an Orchid Society.
Yes. So
it's incredible.
And then what else? Oh, I guess that's more what we're watching. Yeah. So how was your week?
Week was good. We had parent teacher conferences today. So for Mikey and Timmy.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I know both boys are doing awesome. Just as good, if not better than expected, you know, and sometimes you wonder about your kids because you see them at home and you're not sure what they're like when you're not around.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get nothing but good reports and they participate and they get along well and they play with everybody and they're polite and respectful and raise their hands and they do all this stuff. It's like, I don't know where they get it because I sure didn't teach it, but we must have put the right foundation in place, you know?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then again, more 5 a.m. training stuff, 4:45, 5 a.m. training, and more a little bit of what we're watching we'll get to in a little while. But yeah, pretty much that was about it. I mean, just the parent teacher conferences, I think, were the highlight.
Cool. And since you mentioned training, I got a new Fitbit. I finally replaced the Fitbit. My Fitbit died, I don't know how many months ago,
Yeah, a while back.
Like 6 months ago or something like that.
Let me guess. The Versa 2.
The Versa 2 with Alexa.
With Alexa? So what do you say? Like, play me whatever? And
well, the Alexa on the Versa 2, I've only had it for, I guess, 24 hours now. I got it yesterday. But you have to hold the button. You have to press the button for it to work. And it's basically just for taking notes or setting timers or setting alarms or setting reminders. So it has three basic functions to it. I'm sure software updates will, you know, beef it out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wanted to get something that would take into account the swimming.
Okay.
Cause I'm like, oh, I swam 300 yards, you know? And I'm like, 300 meters or whatever. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't, you know? So this morning I was swimming. Yeah. So it's waterproof. Yeah.
And then you're like on the computer, you're like, how many yards? Or you're like, you know, whatever, do some translate thing, you know, or you're a Mac user,
yes.
iPhone user and stuff. Why not the Apple watch, just as it were?
It was kind of, price is one thing, I guess. And,
right.
And, you know, even though I really like the Fitbit. I like the Fitbit, you know, the stuff that it had going on. And it's kind of funny because we're an Apple family, but at the home, Alexa has won. You know, we're not fans of Siri. We do.
Nah, Siri's junk.
But Alexa's all over the place. We got a free new Echo Dot at work. You know, everybody got a new Echo Dot. So we put this Gen 3 Echo Dot in the kitchen, and it reaches the whole house. But, you know, even though it reaches the whole house, we still have one in the bathroom, one in the kids' bedroom, one in our bedroom. So we got four.
Amazon is watching you.
Amazon is listening for sure.
Weren't they going to do something where, like, it can watch you get dressed and
yes.
then suggest outfits or something?
Yeah, the Echo look.
Oh, creepy.
And it could record what you wore so you don't have to, so it could memorize your combinations and, you know. And the kids every morning, they ask Alexa, Alexa what to wear, but it's just the Alexa Dot. So the Alexa has no idea, you know, what to tell them.
So I have the Fitbit Ionic.
Yes.
And I have two complaints with it. One is if you run, it automatically starts tracking. Exactly the same thing with the bike. It'll automatically pick up like, oh, you're on your bike, and it just starts tracking what you're doing as far as heart rate and all that stuff.
Right.
The run, it'll turn on the GPS and track your run, but the bike, it doesn't.
Why?
I don't know. You'd think it would just be like, oh, you're on your bike, you're running, whatever you're doing, we're going to turn on the GPS for you.
You know who you should call? You should call Paula.
Who's Paula?
Paula was the Fitbit rep that got me to buy the Versa 2 when I was just kind of shopping around. Because I called in because they had said, like, you get a 40% discount the next time you buy a Fitbit because the last Fitbit died.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And she was super cool. She's like, we'll get you reactivated, you know, we'll get the thing back. And I was like, well, I have you on the phone. Just explain to me some of the models that you are offer, you know. And she didn't talk me into it. I was definitely leaning towards the Alexa, but there was no discount on the Alexa. So I was like, do I pony up the thing? And I was like, all right, I'll give it a month. We'll try it for a month. If I don't like it, then I'll return it for the Charge 3 or something, you know?
Yeah. And then the second thing I don't like about the Fitbit is I shift over workouts to Strava.
Yes.
And then I could see like Strava stats and, you know, my heart rate and whatever. And I can look at like, you know, all the training stuff.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if you don't have GPS data, all it says is workout with like a generic heart rate. It might not even do that. It's like, you know, might have like 25 minutes, let's just say, and like heart rate, and that's it, you know, or you're going to do like indoor training and you're going to say, it's just going to say workout. And it's going to be like an hour, 2 minutes. And I was looking into it, and the reason that, like, on the Fitbit app or the Fitbit website, they show you like all the stats, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But to get it over into Strava to compare it to like what you're doing on the road and to see like your fatigue levels and all these things, if there's no GPS data, it doesn't transfer any of the other data.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why that would be. I mean, just transfer the data over. It's there. It's just not tied to a GPS signal.
Yeah.
Right? So auto bike should turn on the GPS and it should share the information across to Strava with or without GPS. You're just looking at heart rate and you're looking at like calories burned and you're looking at, you know, even the title spinning, it just shows up as workout. Yeah. It doesn't even give the title properly. So those are my two complaints that I've been scouring the internet and everybody seems to be complaining about it, you know, and they don't seem to do anything about it. So whatever.
Switch to Garmin. My daughter, Audrey, has the Garmin for swimming and it can analyze your stroke and knows which one you do and stuff like that. But
I was going to say, once the Ionic dies, whenever that happens, I was going to plan on a Garmin, but man, it's like the one I'm looking at is like $600. Just way too expensive.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Watch Talk for episode 90. Let's get into the reason that Ted is good with accents.
What?
Yeah. So did you understand in Six Underground starring Ryan Reynolds, the opening line?
No. Did you? I don't even know. I don't even know this.
No, it's just the guy's British accent is so thick. I can't understand him. So I sit Clarissa down and she said, I don't even know what he said. She sits down to listen and she's like, all he said was, you're ruining my stride or something or whatever it was. And I'm like, how do you hear that? She goes, what? It's right there. So I played it. So I found a way to decode British accents on YouTube.
Closed captioning.
No, you slow it down by half. And they say it really slow. And then you can pick up what they're saying. But Six Underground starring Ryan Reynolds. Is starring Ryan Reynolds, is that part of the title?
No, but they definitely... So Netflix is like, we don't care about conventions. You know, we're Netflix. We can call it whatever we want. We can title the YouTube clip whatever we want in our thing. So they call it Six Underground starring Ryan Reynolds. If you're going to put the legacy cell in something... Why waste the card? You know, you're going to have a card with it later, but you can put it in the title right there. And then Ryan Reynolds fans have something to crawl over when. So this is just a legacy cell on Hyperdrive.
What's Hyperdrive?
Netflix just playing with the space, playing with the YouTube.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Six Underground starring Ryan Reynolds. And is Ryan Reynolds like that big of a draw?
I think he is. I think this hits in that space where that frontier, I didn't even see that movie. It has the big budget, big blockbuster male stars. So I think he's a draw for that. I mean, he's Deadpool, you know, he's got some cachet.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I gotcha.
And this is the crowd. This is the Michael Bay crowd.
For sure.
I think, you know, you could have gone with Six Underground starring Ryan Reynolds directed by Michael Bay, you know. Let's go all out if we're going to do a legacy cell and a title.
Yeah, just keep rolling.
So I love the fact that the way this trailer hits you, Netflix usually gives you a Netflix icon at the top to sell that it's Netflix. And
right.
And they don't do that at all in this one. Like when I saw this one cold before I knew it was Netflix, I thought it was a theatrical movie. And when Michael Bay was on there, it totally sold me as theatrical. So I love this approach to trailering from Netflix.
Yeah, and they have cash to spend when you start looking at the people that they have. And I mean, the budget and the explosions and what I find interesting is that this team is so into gassing people that they have like custom gas masks.
It's a way to go, you know. It's super simple. It takes out people without a lot of effort, you know.
That's right. So let me get this hierarchy straight. All right, you have like your standard civilian, and then you kind of have your standard run-of-the-mill soldier.
Okay.
And then you have like your special forces special ops guy. And then you have like the Delta Force SEAL Team 6 or whatever, like top end.
That's what you were in.
Yeah, right. Top end, you know, powerhouse special operator guys. And then they take like the best of the best, like Delta operators or something, stage a death, and then they go.
They fake kill them.
And then they go like ghost.
Right.
And they're like a ghost warrior that's like, that has carte blanche to do whatever, kill whomever, to do whatever they need to do to finish the mission, to finish the job.
That's right.
So is that what this is really about, though? Is like this carte blanche type special operations team that doesn't exist?
It seems like it. It seems like it's, you know, it's a Clancy / Ghost Recon / you know, gamers kind of future. It's a fantasy world for shooters, you know. It's,
yeah,
I think that's it, you know. And they have all the cool locations, you know. Michael Bay has his, you know, stamp on this. I just love the fact that they throw the Duomo in the middle of this. Like,
yeah,
we go to Florence just because we can, you know. It's one of those vacation shots where we're like, oh, send the B crew. No, the A crew will take it. We're gonna take the Florence, the Duomo shots. We'll spend a week in Florence and we'll do that.
I totally thought the same thing. You know, I'm like, wow, look at this. Man, it must be nice, you know. You just, because like the money's on the table and they're offering it, you know, it's like, where do you guys want to go for this one? Yeah, we'll go to Florence this time. I like the action in it, though. It looks fun. I mean, it looks action packed and like just one of those popcorn movies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to get a big old bucket of popcorn and just sit on the sofa and, you know, just watch. And then when I'm done, I turn it off. I go to bed.
Well, that's the cool thing about it, right? It's like Michael Bay, for how many years have you had to go to the theater to see Michael Bay movies? You know, it is. So for Michael Bay to go.
And all of a sudden, here we are.
Yeah. Michael Bay to go to the small screen. I guess he produced Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime, but he hasn't done anything. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Everything's in the theater. So this is great. I love the idea of, you know, them poaching theatrical directors and doing the same movie, but just for the small screen.
You know, and it does make you wonder. I mean, we've talked about these things in the past, but like, how much money does Netflix have where they could throw that kind of capital at multiple directors, multiple production companies? I mean, it's not like they're just doing one or two of these things. I mean, they're doing like lots.
Huge, huge slates. And I think you phrased the question a little incorrectly. I would correct it just a slight bit and say, how much credit and how much cachet do they have in this space? Because basically, you know, there's a lot of credit being floated out there for this. It's not, there's hard cash going to the productions, but there's not a lot of hard cash coming in. It's all speculation from Wall Street and the stocks and everything. So if you talk to stock market experts, I think they are concerned about the inversion. I don't know. I'm not a stockbroker, but it's like the cost to returns, you know what I mean? The
like return on investment, I guess.
Yeah. The dollar you spend on that gets spent 10 times by Netflix. So I don't know. We'll see how long it can last, and if they can build enough of a body of work before everybody pulls the rug out from under them, then more power to them. You know, we'll see how it all shakes out.
And when you're talking credit, you're not talking like, look at the credit that they have in the sense of like confidence. You're talking credit more in debt.
Credit cards, yes.
Yeah, okay, I gotcha. You know, and that's true. I mean, people are betting on the come because they're just throwing the money out there and they're doing what they're doing to see what kind of traction they get. And the reason I questioned whether it was credit as far as like debt credit, yeah, versus credit as far as like, wow, they're building a credible type platform, is that they are building a credible platform and they come out with these types of movies and this caliber of directors and action and actors and all this stuff. And then they come at you and they're like, well, we're going from $12.99. Now we're going to like $14.99.
Right.
And I think it's easier for them to raise the price in future increases that people won't balk at, because when you're giving that kind of quality, and I could easily see them getting up there around the $15 mark, the same as HBO.
Oh, yeah.
And HBO's putting out the quality, and I think Netflix is trying to, you know, and I don't know. What do you think? Is $15 like the limit right now?
I don't know. See, I joked with a bunch of people, not at work, but elsewhere, that I think $25 is the limit for something like Netflix. You know, I think that the way that they're building it as a, you know, not, they're building it in such a multi-quadrant kind of space. You know, they're hitting niches all over the place. So if they can hit, yeah, if they can kind of sell themselves as a bundle within a space, you know, within just themselves, you know, if there's something there for everyone, then they can kind of up their cost or the amount someone will spend on something for them. So it's interesting to see where they stop and when they go there, because all the competitors are going to get into this space. And I think, you know, Disney's competition, and obviously I don't speak for Disney, and I've heard this from other analysts, Disney's bottom line is not affected by the people that watch their stuff. There's a intrinsic value of the things that you could buy along with the things that you watch, you know, like, you know, even Star Wars back in the day before it was Disney, they sold Star Wars action figures, and that made more money than the movies, you know, hand over fist. And that's the thing that George Lucas held onto, was those rights, those licensing rights, and it made him a billionaire. So they have a very similar sense of the marketplace as to, you know, it's the streaming service is a flywheel that will keep everything rolling. And for Netflix and for other streaming services, it's the destination. It's the ultimate spot of where everybody wants to be. Even Prime Video is one of the services that Amazon offers in the context of all the things that it does.
Right.
You know? So it's like, it's not the end all be all. It's just like, here's another thing we do. You know what I mean? So they can kind of bundle it with, you know, their delivery service, and, you know, it's interesting. Whereas like CBS All Access and Netflix and Hulu are by their nature only those streaming services. So that's all they have to offer.
Right. I mean, Disney when you think about it. I mean, the movies are a gateway to the parks, are a gateway to, you know, books, and are a gateway to all kinds of stuff, you know.
Consumer products on the whole, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even...
dolls, action figures.
I was going to say pajamas, right. You know, you name it. As is, like you said, with Amazon, I mean, they have a ton of other products, but with all these streaming services, once you get to, like, the saturation point of pricing and you have nothing else to offer but streaming, I don't know, you think $25, wow, that's a lot of money, I think, for... I could see the other ones being a little bit higher because you're gaining so much more benefit from just storing your photos and files and backups and the shipping, and they give money to 10% on the Smile Amazon to charities, you know, and so I could see a little bit more for the Prime there.
I don't know that Netflix does this exactly, but I love the idea that I'm sure a lot of the big streaming services pay AWS for their storage, their back-end storage.
Oh,
so Amazon's making money hand over fist from everybody, you know?
Oh, they run, what, two-thirds the internet or something, or at least store two-thirds the internet.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, Birds of Prey.
Okay, so this is a special contribution this week from Audrey.
Okay.
Audrey's super excited about this movie, and I'm like, Audrey, you know that Birds of Prey is rated R. Well, I'm sure it feels rated R.
It does.
You're never gonna see this movie. You're 13 years old. You know? You're gonna move out of the house to see this movie.
The other thing I was thinking too is what would happen? Like, what would you or Anne do if she came home in an outfit like that?
And face tattoos.
And face tattoos. Yeah, I'm looking. I'm like, you know, for some reason, I was like, you know, I don't know why, but I was thinking similar things with Audrey and being into this. That's funny. That's why I brought that up. I'm like, wow, she's going to see this as like a hero role.
Yes.
And she's going to come home with some like outrageous outfit on.
Yes.
You know, and tat it up and, you know, and then you and Anne will just be like, that's it.
Oh, well, you know.
I love the editing of the trailer.
The trailer has a rhythm to it that is phenomenal. I think
the music carries it through.
I think all three of our trailers this week have a trailer editing that is top notch. I think the quality of trailer cutters and trailer editors for these three trailers was just, you know, amazing and just like feats of art and anticipation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So Birds of Prey, you know, it's so funny. We went over for dessert and beer with Frank and Barbara, and we're over there for just a half an hour before this. And while we're talking about this, I was like, all right, we got to go record with Jimmy. And they're like, oh, what trailers are you going to do this week? And I said, Birds of Prey. And by Audrey's suggestion, and Audrey's like, let me show it to you. I'm like, Birds of Prey is not, you know, Frank and Barbara's kind of movie.
Right. They're not going to be into it. Know your audience.
And Audrey was just like,
first and foremost,
let's just show them anyway. I'm like, all right, fine. Let's show it to them. And you know, Barbara was so sweet. She's like watching it intently, and you know, there's all these action moments where Harley Quinn is just kicking ass and
throwing dynamite.
Yeah, and every time that they do something, Audrey's just like, oh, look at that. That was so awesome. You know, she broke that guy's legs, you know. and then they throw the dynamite, and then Frank's like, oh God, I wish I could do that on the 101, you know. But at the end, Barbara was like, you're totally right, Ted. We would not see this movie at all.
It's hilarious. Yeah. What I always tell people is, you know, you got to know your audience.
Of course.
Who are you speaking to? It's like you're speaking to, you know, old folks. But what I like about the music and the trailer cutting is, regardless the speed and tempo of the visuals, mm-hmm. the music like smooths it out and like rides you through nice and even.
And it gives you like an ethereal kind of pace and feel. And there's a, you know, as we're watching it, you could tell that it was like, and Frank was like, oh, that was a cool car. Is that an old car? Is it a period piece? And I'm like, no, it's Gotham. So because it's Gotham, it has this off-kilter, not old, not new, but different feel to it. And they really carry that out.
So you brought that right into the next thing I wanted to talk about. And that is, like, if we do the DC Marvel comparison, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, say Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, superhero to superhero kind of a thing. And I kind of thought of it as, like, DC's quirkiness.
Yes.
So they do have an air of quirk to the scenes, to the, like, again, the way the cars are designed, the outfits, the characters.
The title.
Yeah, the title.
Birds of Prey and the Fabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
You know, and then you have the grotesquely huge Dynamite.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's like cartoonish and so on, you know, and it's very much that like vibe and quirkiness, like I said, versus Marvel, which lives like in our world, you know, or say Avengers. It lives in our world, even though they are superheroes and they do space travel and they do all the, I mean, I guess maybe the one quirky one would be
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy with, you know, the talking raccoon and, you know,
talking, what is it? A panda. What is it? What kind of panda?
Groot.
Groot. Yeah. I am Groot.
Yeah. Groot.
Yeah. But I mean, DC has like the, what is it? The carnival hammer and, you know.
Exactly. You know, the Batzooka, which I think when I get to it, though, I think it's why I always enjoy DC a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
is because you just take it with that, you know, like tongue in cheek sort of a approach. And it wasn't trying to be anything more than what they're showing you on the screen to be, just like kind of the silliness that it is, all within the, I don't know, superhero realm of, I mean, not all of them are, of course. I mean, Superman's not really that way.
Right.
You know, and he tries to operate in our world, or at least, you know, the Superman, like, storylines and such. But I think that's the difference, where, like, Marvel tries to make it, you know, here comes Thor, and he comes down as a god and everything, but yet he's trying to, like, fit into, like, the universe that we have.
Right.
And I don't know. I like DC.
Yeah, DC has definitely, they have two big fields that they play in. They play in this field of the god worship, you know, kind of space, where you have the Superman and Wonder Woman, where they're gods among men. Even Aquaman kind of plays off of that.
Right.
And then they have this oddball kind of space that Batman occupies with all of his other, you know, all of his compatriots of Catwoman and all, and Harlequin and Joker, and even
Green Lantern, and, you know,
Green Lantern. Yeah, he's kind of in the middle of that, because he's kind of, I think he falls in the god side. But
okay,
what's hilarious to me is that this even follows through that whole theory of what you're saying. It follows through to the production side, to the executive side, because today, we're recording on Friday, today the, not the Joker, but Joker came out, and it's a different Joker. It's, you know, it's Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. And when Harley right. Quinn talks about the Joker, she's talking about...
Oh, you're talking about the guy that died.
No, not that. Not Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. Who?
She's talking about... what's his name?
Not Jack Nicholson.
People call him the worst Joker of all Jokers.
I like the Jack Nicholson one.
I don't even know the name of the movie to look up when I... All right, so Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn. What's the actress's name?
Here we go.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad. So Suicide Squad, Jared Leto.
Oh, Jared Leto? Yeah, he was the worst Joker of all time.
That's the consensus on Twitter. The consensus on Twitter is he was the worst Joker of all time. Who was your favorite? You said your favorite was Jack.
Yeah, I like Jack Nicholson. I was looking something up too. I see that. Oh, so yeah, because she was in that one, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's why when she talks about me and Mr. J are broke up, she's talking about Jared. But she's talking about Jared like now in the time when we're thinking of Joaquin Phoenix as being the Joker. There's no continuity to their universe. Kevin Feige would never let this happen.
Of course not. Not with the Hulk. And not with Iron Man.
Okay. The Hulk is the one where he came the closest to doing it, but it does feel like they hit the Hulk in different allotments.
Yeah, but Kevin Feige did it with Terrence Howard and Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle, yeah.
Changing people, and then he changed the Bruce Banners. So I don't know. I mean, they all do it, I guess, because you have contracts and you have...
But he would never let them overlap like this.
I see what you're saying. So in other words, you have a Hulk, you know, with Bruce Banner being changed to Mark Garofalo from Edward Norton, but he's doing it over the course of like 3 years, not on like the release date and the release of the trailer.
Correct.
I gotcha.
They're not gonna let the confusion live the way that this is through this space. So I don't know.
And that might be because he has more probably like control over the whole property, where this is probably done by multiple directors, multiple producers, and
right.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess when you have like a greater control, like, you know, whatever you think of George Lucas changing Star Wars and messing with your childhood, like, he too had the full control.
He had too much control.
Yeah, of course. All right. So Birds of Prey. I know Audrey would like to see this one, but are you going to see it?
I don't know. I want to see it, but I just don't know how to see it because Anne doesn't want to see this. She has no interest in this. I don't see this as something that somebody, I'd have to go watch this alone. And, you know, it's kind of hard.
So why is Anne not into Birds of Prey?
It's just not her kind of movie.
Okay. Yeah. Birds of Prey, a Harley Quinn story.
Yeah. Or, well, no.
What is the title again?
Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Fantabulous.
Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. It's a juxtaposition of a made-up word and a extremely high intelligent word. You know, it's definitely Harlequin. You can picture Margot Robbie saying it
for sure. All right, from Margot Robbie to The Gentlemen.
So The Gentlemen is, I think, my favorite of the three trailers, or the favorite movie of the three that I have. I think probably both, because it sets up the storytelling from within the trailer. You know, it tells you that it's going to tell you a story, and then it tells you a story about the story. You know, it's like... And then the whole way through, he's kind of, you know, tell him what you're going to tell him, and then tell him, and then tell him what you told him. You know, it's like, it sets it up so perfectly as a nested story within the trailer.
And watching it, you know, I like to go into these things just
cold
so I can see. Yeah. In my first thought, I'm halfway through and I'm like, this is a total Guy Ritchie movie. Because it has like the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Or Snatch, uh-huh. It has that feel to it, you know, and then of course I looked it up. I'm like, yeah, it is.
There it is.
Yeah. Like it has his stamp on it for sure. And it goes right along with your theme tonight for at least two of the movies, you know, can't understand British guy. So again, the opening statement or the opening line from Hugh Grant, I don't know what he's saying.
And that's funny. And that's funny too, because Ewan McGregor in Birds of Prey says things and I don't understand what he's saying, but Ewan McGregor in Birds of Prey is so inconsequential to the plot of these women kicking ass all over that trailer that it doesn't even, you don't even remember it.
Yeah. I didn't even know Ewan McGregor was in there. I'm not even kidding either.
But yes, so the British thing, right? It's funny.
It's safe to say that like all the guys in this are the gentlemen.
Yes, I think so.
I mean, I kind of got the vibe that, you know, all these top actors, Matthew McConaughey and Colin Farrell, etc., like they're the gentlemen. And I think it's timely too, because like with all the cannabis growing, like getting legal and everything, and then it's still kind of like in this movie, it shows it kind of like as black market still. Like, you know, you have it underground and you have it, you know, kind of like mob run or something.
Yeah. And it feels kind of like a period piece or kind of a piece in time. So I think we can either say it's overseas, it's in England, or it feels like it's in Britain.
Yeah, but those are the Guy Ritchie movies.
So that's why it can feel like it still has the Prohibition stamp on it, you know what I mean? We can still have fun with Prohibition movies, even if pot is legal.
That's right.
And my biggest concern was with this movie was I saw the thumbnail, and the thumbnail has Matthew McConaughey. And as you see Hugh Grant and you see Charlie Hunnam, like he's kind of doing an accent, you know, and I'm like, I don't know. The Americans doing British accents, they never work as well as the Brits doing American, you know?
Oh, there's times, you know, I'll watch a...
Russell Crowe.
The redheaded British guy. Damian Lewis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The first time, you know, like, let's say I'm watching Band of Brothers He's playing Major Winners.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he's amazing. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, he's doing his thing and he's doing, like, the American accent and all this stuff.
He's an American treasure.
It was like, yeah. And then it was something on YouTube and he's on, like, their version of, like, The Tonight Show.
Yes.
And I'm like, that guy's British? Like, I had no idea. Because he played the American accent, like, too well.
Or like Hugh Laurie in this one, right? He's a Brit, but he's House. And House is, like, the most obnoxious American you could ever think of. But,
for sure.
But he's a Brit, you know?
I know, man. It's like, yeah, Brits can pull it off. Like, they're good actors that way. But, yeah, you know, it's so... I think, like, it's so easy to make a British accent, you know, like, as an American, but it's so hard to actually do it well, though.
I think so. And that was the one thing that when I saw Matthew McConaughey's face, and we don't see Matthew McConaughey till a little bit into the trailer, I was concerned for those first 30 seconds before we see him.
That he was going to have a British accent?
That he was going to do a British accent. I was like, oh,
me too.
No, don't do a British accent. You gotta stick with all right, you know?
Once he started speaking, like, I gave a sigh of relief.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're with me on that, because
yeah,
I was like, don't do it, Matthew McConaughey.
And his face is so ubiquitous that if he were to, you'd be like, this is stupid.
Right. He couldn't, even if he did it well, you wouldn't believe it because he is so well known.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I was like, you know, regardless if, you know, Danny Boyle or Guy Ritchie or whomever tells you to do it, you know, if you're Matthew McConaughey, you walk onto that set and you're like, I'm not doing an accent. I can do one, but I'm not doing it. You know,
maybe that's why Kevin Costner.
Oh yeah.
Everybody was British and he did Robin Hood with his Kevin Costner American accent.
I'm effing Kevin Costner. I don't do an accent.
Yeah. Maybe he just said, like, it was at the time of, like, Dances with Wolves and everything. I'm too well known to do a silly little British accent. I'm just going to do my accent and then you're just going to deal with it. And then you watch it and you're like, wow, this movie's horrible. You know? But yeah, this looks cool. I like these movies. These are some of my favorite kind of movies. You know, they're fast paced. They're fun to watch. The story clips along. They're not too complicated. You know, it's right up in there with like the Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Or the Italian Job.
Swingers.
You know, even the Bourne movies. You know, they kind of just tick along and they're entertaining. Again, more popcorn movies. All these movies are popcorn movies this week, you know.
It's kind of amazing that he's come back to this. I think, you know, like, I like the Sherlock Holmes movies that he did, but I don't know that they were exactly, they were kind of like this fresh take on Sherlock Holmes, but I don't think they served any particular master. And this is like his bread and butter stuff. Like, it really goes back to Lock, Stock and Snatch.
Oh yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Quintessential movies of my growing up.
Yeah. And they're awesomely directed. They always have that broad cast of characters that tends to be better than middle of the road actors. You know, you get a lot of good actors, and there's some middle of the road actors, of course, but you get a lot of good actors. Like, you're going into it knowing you're going to be entertained.
Yeah.
You're not looking for any sophisticated dialogue. The dialogue that's there is there to move the story along. The scenes are there to move the story along. There's wit and humor and there's everything that you want out of it. And it's not too heavy. And they're fun movies, you know?
Oh, it's amazing. And I think as far as pace goes, this is another one where there's a rhythmic pace. And and they use like the beats of the action and the beats of the sound design.
For sure, yeah.
Over the music, you know, it's like the sound design overpowers the score in this trailer. And I think that is, to me, the one of the my favorite of the new trailer tropes.
Yeah, I like that. You know, like there'll be music and then the beat to the music is the guy knocking on the door or something. You know, I dig that. I mean, I think that's pretty clever and well-timed and I, you know. All right, man. So, yeah, I think all three movies I would definitely watch.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, just get a big old bucket of popcorn and you're just going to sit down and, you know, just plow through them and enjoy and just have some brainless fun.
Right.
Of, you know, the kind of movies that people enjoy, I think. You know, They're not to the point that they're just annoying explosion movies.
Right.
You know, like where the gratuitous gunplay and everything. I mean, there's tons of just like they're fun and there's good dialogue that goes along to have that wit and humor. And especially with the Brits, they're kind of dry and, you know.
And I think the Six Underground, I'll be able to get Anne to watch maybe if we're at home and we got the right 2 hours to watch it. And then I think The Gentleman, I might be able to sell it to get her out to go out to the movies with me to go see that.
Who's that, Anne?
Anne, yeah. I think she would go see it. Okay. Just because of Hugh Grant and the cast. You know, I think it is something that she would go see and would enjoy. It wouldn't be like a bait and switch like a couple of movies that I've taken her to. So, you know.
Bait and switch. That's funny.
But that kind of leads us into what we're watching this week if you're done with The Gentleman.
By all means, man, get into it. What is Ted watching this week?
So we watched the night. What is it? Oh, man. The Tonight Show? What is it? Not The Tonight Show.
Is that
Late Night. Late Night. Was it Late Night? Let's make sure.
That's not the one on Apple, is it?
No, it's the series on Apple.
The Jennifer Aniston one?
But the movie that was on Prime a long time ago with, yeah, Late Night is the name of the movie with Emma Thompson and Mindy Kaling. Mindy Kaling plays
The writer. We covered
this one. And Emma Thompson's kind of the aging late night hostess. And, you know, and Mindy Kaling shows her her truth, her roots, everything. And it's just smart. It's smart comedy, smartly written, well written, nothing out of what you would expect, but all of your expectations are met. So it's a satisfying movie. It's strange to sit through a movie and like it so much and yet not be surprised by anything. So I loved it. I loved every turn and every, you know, every fold as it unfolded. So it was satisfying. It was just a great movie to watch.
Very cool. So anything else, or was it just Late Night this week?
So we watched it last weekend, and like I said, it was a very busy work week, and, you know, evenings are rough with the kids and homework and stuff, so.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
That was it for this week, but I was like, we gotta watch something, because I can't show up to Jimmy another night without watching anything, you know?
There you go. Yeah, we've did more work in moms in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're doing the, you know, the intervals on the indoor trainer for the bike. And so they're like 22 minutes, you know,
mm-hmm.
And in an hour, you get like three of them. So Clarissa's comment when we're done, she's like, that was so hard. I couldn't even concentrate on what I was trying to do for the, you know, a minute on, a minute off, 2 minutes on, you know, whatever. She's like, we got to watch something, you know. So then the next morning we finished the Bill Gates Brain.
Right.
But then are you into steampunk?
No, but I know of it. Yes.
Okay. Because we went all the way back to episode 5 and we watched Mortal Engines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mortal Engines.
Was it good?
It was okay. I mean, takes place about 1,000 years in the future.
In the dystopic future.
Dystopic future. And they like collect electronics and junk from like our time.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they'll have like toasters, you know, like Sunbeam toaster or something. And they dismantle these things to build like their, I don't know, engines.
Their city engines.
Yeah, yeah, their city and so on, right? And all the stuff they have going on. And they have weapons and they have like flight, but it's flight that's very different than the kind of flight we have. But it's more like, it's like a steampunk feel to it, you know?
Okay.
There is electronics and electrical things. It's not, I mean, steampunk, it's really not steampunk. It just has that feel to it.
Right.
Like the outfits.
The style.
The style is, yeah. Even like the earthy tones and everything, you know? And
yeah.
I would say overall, it was okay. I mean, out of 5 stars, I would have given probably 3. You know, Hugo Weaving was good in it. You know, I don't know. It was entertaining. So first night we're watching, and I think it was Sunday, and I just had to go to bed. There was about an hour. It was like about a 2-hour 5, 2-hour 10 movie. And I'm just like, I got to go to bed, you know? So we go to bed and we just finished it the other night. And the last like 15 minutes, I fell asleep. So then, before.
Sorry, Peter Jackson.
Yeah. So then before the show tonight, I finished the last 15 minutes. I rewatched it so I could see how it ended. So I got to admit, though, I didn't like it was just the discontinuity of my viewing was not helping the cause of the story, I'm sure. But yeah, I got enough of it. I got enough.
Okay. Okay. You figured it out.
Yeah. And it was, you know, the main character and there was this weird robot guy and it was a little weird. I thought, I don't know.
3 stars.
3 stars.
And late. So if we're doing stars, I'll give late night out of 5 stars. I'll give it 4 stars.
4 stars.
Or maybe
okay.
4.5. I'm a generous star giver. I'll give it 4.5 stars.
Well, I'm a generous star giver too. You know what it is? You know who it's for? It's for people who like they want to live in like a future dystopic world that is enough like our world, but is very different from our world. Like kind of also living in that fantasy realm.
Right. If you're a loser now and you like cosplay, then this is perfect for you.
Yeah, cosplay is a good way to put that. It's a total like Comic-Con, you know, you could get in some like long velvety jacket coat thing and
walk around.
Know, totally.
Walk around with like the monocles that like slide over your eyes at different lengths.
Yeah, they didn't really do any of that stuff, but I get the idea.
Yeah, conceptually.
I like the spirit of it.
Yes, okay, good.
But so you've heard, right?
What's that?
Nothing.
Oh, good.
No, because it's like, yeah, you know, you have these outfits, you know, and then like you sound like an expert, but like, you know. But I don't do anything.
No,
like
not at all. I don't do LARPing at all.
LARPing. Yeah, you know, Mortal Engines. I mean, you know, I would say the other thing, too, that I couldn't really figure out is the big London city wants to, like, engulf the smaller little towns.
Right.
They're all on wheels. And I still couldn't. I guess that they wanted their resources, their mechanical resources, but it didn't make sense because the big city already was like rolling along. I don't know. It was kind of weird.
Mm.
I didn't really get the premise of it. Maybe I fell asleep on those parts.
Maybe it's a more of a commentary on industrial progress. And like, even though something's successful, it doesn't matter how successful it is. It always wants to engulf the next thing to make it more successful.
Yeah, I was thinking along those lines too. Like, I'm like, okay, what is the message they're sending?
It's a social commentary about the industrial revolution.
Yeah, and I was almost thinking too, like, is this like an urban sprawl message? Like, they're just...
Yeah.
So they're not sprawling in the sense of like a phoenix is sprawling, but like they're sprawling because they can drive this thing everywhere.
Right.
You know, and like there is no out of bounds for this huge city with these huge tracks that as it goes places, it crushes the earth like, you know, 30 feet deep because of the weight of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which is kind of cool. I mean, I'd have to say the CGI in it was very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the CGI was really good, bit.
Well, it's Peter Jackson, you know, he has everything at his disposal.
That's for sure. Well, yeah, I mean, you show up with Lord of the Rings. That's all you need, you know? All right, Ted.
Well.
Yeah, Peter Jackson was, what, one of the writers, I guess, wasn't he?
I thought he directed. He didn't direct it? Oh, no, it was produced by him, right?
Well, screenplay was Peter Jackson.
Okay.
And then Christian Rivers was the director.
Okay, awesome. And I will say, let me just say one last thing. You know, it's so funny because you guys, every morning you're doing your circuit training in your space.
Yeah.
And when I'm on the treadmill, I normally put my earbuds in. And I'll listen to a podcast or something like that. But I will say for the half hour that I'm swimming in the morning, I don't put on earbuds because I don't have waterproof earbuds. So I'm like lost in thought for half an hour a day. And I think that might be my favorite thing about my swimming regimen that I've been doing this past couple of weeks is that I get completely disconnected from all devices. And I kind of have to take my glasses off. I can't even see, basically. And I am just like completely separated from the world. And I just like put my one arm over the other arm and just keep going, you know? And it's kind of, it's an interesting kind of distraction. I used to run without any music or without any headphones. I used to run like 5 miles on my long days and, you know, a couple miles every other day. And that kind of running, that kind of trance running is kind of a interesting thing. So I don't know. I need to go back to the treadmill or running, but I think if I do, I might try without any devices. So we'll see how that goes.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because like on the indoor trainer, uh-huh. You're doing these workouts for like an hour, you know, and you just need distraction from the mental like pain yeah. that is riding going nowhere. Uh-huh. But when I get on the road on the weekend or mountain biking or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
Like, but let's just say road riding and, you know, I'll do like, say a 3 hour ride to the beach and back. And, you know, it's like an hour and a half there, hour and a half back, whatever. And, you know, I don't have any earbuds or I don't have anything. And you're right though. It's like you disconnect.
Yeah.
You know, I do have my phone in my back pocket, you know, like if something were to happen, you know what I mean? But like, I'm not texting or anything, you know, I'm not doing anything with it. And you do have that disconnect and like your brain
charges.
Like kind of turns off for a little bit.
Yeah. And it charges up.
And then, yeah. So like for me, it's like the first hour, I'm just thinking of the route. I'm thinking of where I'm going. I'm looking at the road in front of me. I'm dodging the potholes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then it's like by hour two, now all of a sudden, like I'm thinking about like, I mean, just the wheels start turning, you know, and it becomes meditative.
Yeah.
You know, then by hour three and you're like, oh my God, I gotta go up this big mountain now. The last pass of the day and your like legs are hurting and you're sweating and everything, but it like it becomes like super meditative though. You're so right about that. And you just disconnect, you recharge, and then you get home and it's like I was out of like communication or I was out of like tech whatever.
Contact, yeah.
You know, but just tech too, though. I mean, like you're not listening to podcasts or music or, you know, whatever. And it's like one of those things. It's like one of the last places you can go and people won't bother you.
Right.
You know, and then like you go mountain biking. I go on some like crazy trail, long climb. I go across the top of the mountains above Santa Barbara and all this stuff. And all you hear is the gravel crunching underneath you, you know, and it's not doing, I mean, and you're not like, and you're out there for like hours.
Mm, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you need that once in a while, especially in a world where there's so much stimulus.
Yeah.
Auditory, visual, everything, you know? So that's awesome. And then for you, you're looking at a black line on the bottom of a pool.
No. I'm looking at the ceiling and I'm thinking like if...
Oh, you're backstroking.
I'm backstroke all the way because it's the easiest thing to do. and I just think to myself, so if we were to have an earthquake right now, this ceiling would crash down on me. Would I be able to get out? Would I be able to get out to a place where I could breathe? Or would I just die and suffocate underwater?
I love it.
So that occupies about 10 minutes of my half hour workout.
For sure. Yeah, you're looking at the beams, the brick. Yeah, you're thinking like, I wonder where the air conditioner is up above that.
And now this morning when I was doing it, I was like, oh, don't do that last stroke with the hand with the Fitbit on it. You don't want to smash your Fitbit on the edge of the pool.
So it's waterproof.
It's waterproof. Yeah. It does the whole.
Yeah. And the chlorine doesn't bother it?
No, it said soap is the only thing that really bothers it.
Soap bothers it?
Well, they say don't wash it with soap, you know, so I take it off for my showers.
But go into like crazy chlorine pools.
You and Audrey, come on. Yes. It says chlorine doesn't bother it at all. As long as it dries.
Okay.
As long as it dries and doesn't leave a film, then we're good.
I take mine off. No, like it says it's waterproof to so many meters and stuff. Yeah. I take it off anytime I go near water. Cause I'm like,
you're not going to trick me.
I've had too many Fitbits. I've had too many Fitbits break and fry and all the rest. And it's like, all I need is like a little like splash. And then it's like, what the heck? Just broke. So your beer finished good?
My beer finished amazing. It was great. I actually took another look at this thing and I was like, this is a great beer. It was a great value. It's 12. So it's 12 ABV, and it was $4.99 or $3.99. It's robbery.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
How about you?
I know you're gaming the system. It was super smooth, and I think as it warmed up, some of the flavors released, and I think it became a little less bitter.
Oh, good.
As it warmed.
Yeah, exactly.
And as it warmed, it became like, it's a coffee stout, but it's like those cacao nib type things. And
that chocolate and coffee are forever intertwined in stouts.
For sure. Yeah, and it just like became like more robust, I think.
Yeah.
So it's a good lesson in like, you know, the reasons I like Coors Light. They say when you can see the mountains on the can, it's ready to drink. Well, yeah, because it's so cold, you're freezing my palate.
Can't taste anything.
And I can't taste how horrible this thing is, right? So, but yeah, I mean, the true flavor of beer comes when it warms, you know? And I'm not saying room temperature, but like, you know, in the 50s.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it was very good. Very good, so.
I will say that there are a bunch of Croatian beers that I almost picked up tonight.
Croatian beers?
And they all have like this very specific temperature. It says enjoy at, and it has like a temperature range. And I was like, well, that's a little too haughty for me. If you have to enjoy this beer, yes.
So they're made in Croatia, or they're a Croatian style?
I don't know. So there was about
all the above.
I think it was a Croatian company. There was about five beers on this little shelf on Henny Market, and it was on the cusp. I was, you know, Audrey had talked me into doing the Croatian stuff, and then Bryce picked this one off of the rack. So maybe next week we'll hit up the Croatian beers.
You know, I always think like, what is our, like, this next generation going to be? Because like they're understanding beer. Oh, and really quick, I think we are hitting peak brewery.
Oh, okay.
Because there's two more coming to Lompoc.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's supposed to be like six total in the area opening up.
Yeah, Frank found five right in our general vicinity right here in the valley. So he and I are going to...
Man, peak brewery.
He and I are going to try to hit those other breweries. He talks to me every time I see him. He's like, there's one down by the FedEx over at over there. So that's so when you funny. Come down, we'll have to hit him up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man.
Cool.
You know, I don't know. We'll see. And I guess when they open up here, we'll have to check them out. And
We'll go up there. We'll road trip.
Yeah, Peak Brewery. So hopefully not. I mean, I like all the different breweries and styles. And I mean, it's a fun time to be into beer.
And you're still brewing?
I haven't for a while, but after... I haven't brewed since, December maybe. So it's coming up on a year.
Let's clone a Voodoo Ranger, man.
I'll see if I can find a recipe.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, there's got to be a recipe out there. But yeah, I mean, you know, I after our thing in November, I plan on doing a bunch of brews. So like,
okay, cool.
You know, pretty much every weekend for like four weeks in a row, I want to do a brew.
Oh, we should come up after Thanksgiving and do that. Is that still Sip Lompoc?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're doing it. I mean, I haven't heard anything otherwise.
That's our podcasting anniversary.
There you go. Yeah. All right, man. Well, speaking of that, we better podcast out of here.
Let's do it. All right. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Later.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.